Blog Talk Radio.
The sun go down and lulls us to our sleep. Beloved, who makes the earth so round about the sun to sleep? Mother, who speaks her words in the silent moonlit night above.
Saturday morning, and this is Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friend and co-host, Andre Rodatis. Good morning, Andre.
Good morning, Paula. Good to hear your voice on this beautiful, beautiful Colorado morning.
And welcome to all of our listeners and friends wherever you are and whatever time of day it is for you. Good day to you. We have a show planned today that is especially for people who are thinking about what they might want to do this summer and whether or not they might want to go to the Triennial International Conference for you Rancho Book Readers in Amherst, Massachusetts. And we have on the line with us the conference chair, Angela Thurston. And Angie is a student right now at Harvard Divinity School, and she is an active member of the Fellowship's Youth and Young Adult Committee. Angie, welcome to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you, Paula. Thank you. Great to be
welcome, Angie. Nice to have you back.
And I think we also have, we may have Steve on the line with us, Steve Dreyer. Steve, are you with us? Nope, I guess not. We have area code 320. I'm not sure who that is.
Christina Seaborn.
Oh, it's Christina.
Well, Christina, how are you?
Hi, Andre. Hi, Paula. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
Hi.
Great to have you. I don't know everybody's area code, so that would be something to get so that I know. But I'm so glad you made it on, Christina. Christina is the music director of the conference. We know what a huge job that is, and Angie is the conference chair. And Angie, I'm going to ask you, when did you start working on this triennial conference?
Well, it was shortly after the last one, so I think it was probably about 6 months after IC11, which will mean it'll be 2.5 years by the time the conference rolls around.
2.5 years. And I know that because I've been closely involved with lots of conferences, and so is Christina, and probably, Andre, you have too. It's quite an effort. It takes a lot of effort to put one of these triennial conferences on. The Fellowship has conferences every summer, lesser conferences. We call them the summer study sessions. So the 2 years in between the triennial, we have a summer study. But the triennial is a bigger conference, and it's a pilgrimage. And it lasts longer. The program is much more complicated. There's a very robust children's program involved. There's worships set every day. A wonderful plenary session, which is always my favorite. But it all starts with someone like Angie and a little team of dedicated people who the very first thing they set out to do is find the venue, let's say, for the international conference. And there's a lot of criteria involved in securing a venue. What were some of the things, the challenges you went through, Angie, and why did you guys, your site team, pick UMass Amherst?
Sure. Well, as you just alluded to, Paula, we really, as a group, I think we ask a lot of a conference venue because we have such an amazing and robust conference program for these international triennial events, in that we have a full program of 40 or more workshops that happen throughout the week that we're there, and that sort of resembles more of, you know, what people might consider an academic conference. But then we also have these daily plenaries that have both keynote speeches and musical and worshipful, creative, interactive experiences that our participants get to have. And then we have, as you mentioned, a complete children's program for everyone from our younger kids to then our truth seekers and youth group for teenagers and young adults. And we really encourage young families to come and bring their children. And, you know, then we have our meals happening on campus and our lodging on campus as well. So all told, this is a really amazing kind of full experience that we want to always offer at our international conferences. And so that means the venue really has to be able and excited about accommodating that kind of activity. And so that was a big factor that led us to choose the University of Massachusetts in Amherst, Mass. We had been looking on the East Coast in part because our last two international conferences have been in the western part of the country, in Los Angeles and Salt Lake City, and so we thought it would be good to return east. But also for the purposes of accessibility, we wanted a site that would be near some larger international airports, and Amherst is closest to Bradley International in Connecticut, which is a smaller international airport, but it's also very accessible from Boston, which is a hub for most anywhere. So those were some of the sort of logistical factors. But then I'm sure you, Paula, and Andre and Christina, who have been involved in planning conferences, you know how important it is to have a good working relationship with the team of people who are at the venue itself. And that was one of the things that struck me the most about this campus, because we certainly looked at, gosh, I don't even think I could count how many different campuses we looked at in various parts of the country. And, you know, of course, there's so many factors that go into a decision. But, you know, I think it was maybe two or three different times we actually said no to UMass Amherst because of, you know, whatever combination of costs and our needs and things. And they kept coming back and saying, no, we want to work with you. We can make this work. And, you know, really coming back and addressing our needs specifically and in detail and, you know, making sure that we felt welcomed, which is, you know, not necessarily to be taken for granted, especially on these public university campuses. I can say that I did have experience of approaching a campus and having them say no simply on the grounds of the fact that we are the Urantia Book Fellowship putting on this conference, and that that's not necessarily a group that they feel comfortable hosting. So, you know, the fact that there was not only a comfort but a really deep sense of welcome, and that this campus is situated in the Pioneer Valley, which is just a beautiful part of our country. I've been really thrilled to get to explore it. And also just that it has this kind of amazing religious history. You know, we know a little bit about the significance of this country from the Urantia book and some of the ideals that contributed to its founding. And this is really the heart of where that took place. And so there's, from the beginning, this sort of deeply rooted religious idealism in this part of the country that then has extended for, you know, the past few centuries to a whole bunch of really amazing religious activity. And, you know, as coincidence would have it, I now get to benefit from that in that I'm also in divinity school in this part of the country. So I'm learning about the richness of our country's history there. But, you know, it's something that I really look forward to embracing the local culture of this area and to including and incorporating into the tenor of this conference and to have people be able to experience for a week in July.
And I think we may have Steve holding. I'm going to put him on just in case. Area code 201, you're on Blog Talk with us.
Hi, Paula. Yeah,
hi, it is Steve.
Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. I'm someplace in Maryland, I think. We're on our way home from Florida, so we're in the car at the moment.
Good to have you with us.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Did you want to add something to what Angie was saying? I know you were instrumental in the site search and
Angie,
I know you've done this several times now.
Yeah, I've been involved in several of these. This is a particularly beautiful campus. You know, we tend to do these things at university campuses, mostly because it keeps the costs down. University campuses also vary in aesthetics, and this one is pretty much at the top of the category. It's just a beautiful place. They have a variety of facilities to accommodate people, including a hotel, which is the equivalent of a kind of a Marriott hotel. It's a very nice hotel, well run, and of course it also has the usual college dormitories, and the range is important because some folks who attend these conferences want hotel accommodations. Others are happy with dormitory accommodations. And the main difference, of course, for people is the cost. This conference is a four-day conference. It will run from Wednesday, the 23rd of July, through Sunday, the 27th of July, for the main part of the conference. It's four nights and 5 days, and the cost of attending would be roughly between $500 and about $820, depending upon the accommodations that a person chooses. And that includes all meals, housing, registration, and all other events that are scheduled as part of the conference. So it's as conferences go, I think, especially on the low end, it's quite affordable. It should bring together, we hope, between 400 and 500 readers of the Urantia book, which makes it a kind of a unique gathering. It's very rare to have that many Urantia book readers together in the same place for an extended period of time. This is the one event that accomplishes that. And so it provides an opportunity to meet readers from all over the world, to socialize, to share, to learn, to teach, to serve. It's just a great celebration. Come.
It really
sounds
is.
Good. Be there.
Me up. You know, I know how hard you guys work to keep it affordable, because I've seen you agonize over this over many conferences, many triennial conferences, And, you know, try to factor in. I mean, often the great effort is to just break even and not lose any money. And it becomes a pilgrimage for your Rancho Book readers to come together and have this event and have this chance to spend time with each other. But the real important, another very important thing about the conference is that you really go out of your way to make it possible for families to attend. Can you talk about that a little bit and how you've structured the payments, you know, and the cost for families?
Yeah, there are special reduced rates for children at the conference. There are a variety of options, but for example, children can stay in the hotel room with parents. If two parents in the hotel room plus one or two children would be a considerably reduced rate. The children would pay about roughly a third of the adult registration, and that includes meals, plus all events. There's also a discount. It's a $50 discount for anyone aged 15 to 35 as an incentive. And there are a variety of other possibilities. Right? So we sure would like to see families come to the conference. I think Janet will be talking about the plans for the family program. And Tom, if he's here, I guess we'll be talking about the Truth Seekers program, all activities for our younger participants. And every effort is made to encourage their participation, including getting the fees as low as we can.
Right, it's very affordable when you think $475 for a dorm room. That includes all of your meals and your conference program. I mean, I've gone to conferences where it was, you know, $300 just for the program, and you were on your own to find your meals and your accommodations. So
yeah.
When you think
yeah, that's
that
a great
that includes,
package.
Yeah, it's just very affordable. And I know, you know, money's tight for a lot of folks, but there's camping nearby. I know you guys have located camping, and you're working on that. Really, you know, our effort is always to make it affordable. Angie, you were going to say something?
That's exactly what I was going to say, just that that's always an option as well, is to commute to and from the conference, which is only $40 a day, and that allows, you know, for camping or for seeking lodging elsewhere if people have friends or family in the local area or any other options that don't involve staying on campus. So that's definitely something that we are encouraging of as well, to keep those costs down.
Yeah. By the way, we should mention that the food service at UMass Amherst is nationally recognized as an outstanding university food service. The food is really good. We've been there. And it's not typical college food.
Yes, they are consistently ranked in the top three university dining programs in the country, which they will gladly brag about. And you can definitely tell why. They can accommodate and do accommodate every dietary restriction. They have this multi-room dining hall that has just an extraordinary array of options available for folks. And also just in the local area, even beyond the conference venue itself, if, you know, I've talked to a number of people who've decided to make a larger trip out of this and to go spend some time in Boston or New York or travel around the countryside. And there's also, I mean, I tend to prioritize food when I'm traveling, but there's some really wonderful food in this area, and it's all farmland, so there's a lot of freshly grown local produce, and because it will be summer, you know, there's farmers markets everywhere and farm stands with local fruits and vegetables and any number of other things, such as apple cider donuts, which are a particularly important noteworthy local treat. But, yeah, the conference attendees will not go hungry.
Well, and that is important, and you know what, and what so many times conference attendees say is it's those community meals where you can sit down with somebody from a different part of the country or maybe even a different part of the world, and you get to know people at those meals. Being able to sit down and eat together is really special. And the fact that we just spend the whole time there together, we eat together, we play together, we worship together, we study together, we discourse and discuss and conference, it really does, that's what makes it special. It's very much of a community gathering. And
well, it's really a revelation. The revelation in it all is getting to meet who are the other people that read this book and study this book and are attracted to the truths in this message. And what's always been a revelation to me at every conference has been the wide variety of people and the fact that this really crosses every boundary I've ever seen. It really appeals to all types and all categories of human beings, with the one proviso that people are looking for truth. They're truth seekers and seeking for that high level of truth that the Urantia book offers. And boy, that commonality, I know all of you can speak to this as well. The really remarkable thing that happens in a conference is that you start from a higher foundation. There's less that needs to be gone through in order to establish a relationship with people in general.
Absolutely. And, you know, I want to get Christina in here, too, because Christina, you know, and the thing that a lot of people don't realize or maybe don't think about is how much it takes to put on a program. And I was just saying how a lot of times you spend, you know, you can pay $300 just for the program, just for the registration fee, and that's what pays for the program. And oftentimes with our Urantia conferences, musicians and presenters, amazing presenters, knowledgeable presenters, people who have studied and, you know, scholars of the teachings, come on their own nickel and present. And I know musicians have done this forever, and it's a big deal. You know, there's a lot of equipment involved. There's a lot of effort, years of weekly and monthly meetings in preparation for a great program, and so much of it is just a labor of love, a gift of love. And do you want to speak to the musical program and what's involved in putting that on?
I'd love to. Well, I have a Light and Life house band made up of really fabulous musicians from all around the country. And what we do is we arrive 2 days before the conference to rehearse. And prior to that, we put out the music as best as we can with the idea of what would be best for worship, for the Friday night concert, for the club UB. We have all these different places where we have live music, but there are artisans in other areas such as poetry, mime, dance, visual arts, and it's a really very creative community. The Urantia book inspires us and encourages us to cultivate our creative selves. And I don't think there is enough time and space for all the creativity of the people in the Urantia movement at the conference. And my biggest problem is that artists tend to wait till the last minute to let you know that they're coming. And so I do my best as I travel around the country to meet people and talk to them and find out if they're coming so that we can plan ahead. But I also, in the schedule, I try to make a cushion for that artist that's going to show up, especially we're so near New York and Boston in Amherst. I just know the most amazing person is going to show up that none of us has ever heard of. So we have an open mic, the Club UB, and that is actually going from 9 at night until midnight on the Thursday and Friday night. So you can come and sign up to do an inspirational reading or a song you've been working on or anything like that. For the plenaries, we have 45 minutes of worship, then 45 minutes of the plenary speaker and a discussion time. So we really plan to bring you to a very deep place during the worship, and then go to our left side of our brain during the plenary speech. And so we'll have a nice balance of right and left brain. We have music, live music on Wednesday night for our meet and greet, Friday night for the concert, and then Saturday night for our final dinner. We actually, this year, for the first time, we'll have a string quartet, a harp, and a choir, and in addition to a rocking house band and horns. It's just going to be a great year for music.
I'm so excited about that, because that's one of my favorite parts, is the musicians, and the things you guys pull together are just extraordinary. I mean, it's amazing how hard you work, and, you know, again, we forget that how much rehearsal is involved, and I know that during the whole conference, the musicians are rehearsing. They're almost rehearsing the whole time, and then they perform for the plenaries and for Club UB, as you said. And in the evening, I know you guys have a concert planned. Can you tell us a little bit about the concert you have planned?
Well, I'd like to mention the different musicians just to give you a flavor. We have Benjamin Herndon, who is a bass player from New York, and he has written quite a bit of music based on the Urantia Book teachings. And he tends to be more on the rock side, and he likes to really raise the roof. We have Steve Chanel, who's a drummer near Atlanta, Georgia, and he has sort of that southern gospel rock blues style and a great sense of humor. Rebecca Oswald, who's from Oregon, and she's a concert pianist, has written original music and just phenomenal on the piano. Marvin and Francil Garwin are a couple. We heard music from Francil at the beginning of this show, and Marvin was playing congas. And Francil is one of those voices that, well, you just can't even breathe when you're listening to her sing. Mm. And you're completely captured and enraptured by the words and her voice. And she also has written quite a bit of original music on a very spiritual level. Marianne Brundage is our harpist, and I am so excited to be working with her because she is a wonderful worship coordinator, and the harp will bring us to very, very close communion with our Father. It's going to be beautiful. Robert DePonte has been in our house band for many years and does quite a bit of great rock and roll guitar and singing, and again, we'll raise the roof for you. Jonathan Johnson, a guitarist from San Diego, was one of the original musicians in the original production of Hair on Broadway, and it's really exciting for me to meet him. And again, it's these musicians that just come that are Urantia Book readers that I've met for the first time. I'm so excited to meet. And he also writes wonderful spiritual music for worship. And the final person on our team is Stephen Michael Paik, who was at our 2005 conference, and he's a original founding member of the Omega Institute and has helped people on their spiritual journeys through workshops, and also a singer-songwriter guitarist. So he and Benjamin have been colleagues for many years, even since the 60s, so they know each other really well. And so we have a solid foundation with piano, guitar, bass, and drums, and then we have the frosting on the cake with the vocals and violin and harp. So I think you will thoroughly enjoy the music program this year.
That
wow, that's
great.
So exciting. Doesn't it? I mean,
yeah.
What a great lineup.
I would like
musicians.
To also mention we have Michael Duncan has agreed to be our choir director, And we have composers, Bettina Gray, who's written for string quartet, choir, and flute, and Francois Garwin. So we have some original compositions that will be featured as well. And Allison Zopel is coming. She will be co-directing the Club UB with Stephen Michael Pig. And we have Keith Malley, who has agreed to be our children's choir director.
Wow.
So it's a phenomenal team.
Well, and Allison, we've had Allison on the show. Our listeners might remember. Allison went into a coma for 5 years and came out with an extraordinary musical ability. So it'll be great to have everyone you mentioned there and to see them perform and enjoy their music. And what a lot of our listeners may not know is that our own Angela Thurston, Angie, is also an accomplished musician and playwright and composer. And Angie, is are you still planning on performing your play at IC14?
Yes. We are planning to have that on the program Saturday night, and Christina has been a phenomenal collaborator. We've been working on this show together. It's a musical for children based on the relationship between Jesus and his youngest sister, Ruth. And we are looking forward to presenting that and have a developmental workshop reading planned for the spring, for May. We're going to hear it on its feet for the first time and start working on some revisions and anything else that needs to be put together before presenting it at the conference. And, you know, this will be the first time that it's ever presented, and so the hope is that we'll be able to get feedback from our conference attendees and then see what kind of life the show might be able to have after IC14 as well.
Wonderful.
What's the name of it?
It's called The Story of Ruth.
The Story of Ruth.
Yeah.
And it is a musical, correct?
It is a musical.
Yeah. We got a taste of that in Yosemite, and it was just a wonderful taste. A song of Jesus and Ruth singing together. Oh, man, it was just so sweet. And there was, we created a video of that and sent it out, and I think it's probably online. People want to get a taste of that, then the story of Ruth, that would be a great way to do it. And Steve, I see you're back. You dropped off for a while, but you're back with us here. I know how it is when you're driving along.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit to the program that Peter has planned, both you and Angie, perhaps?
Well, I can speak a little bit to the program. Angie can probably do a somewhat more comprehensive job. Unfortunately, I don't have the papers in front of me. But as usual, it's an extensive program. There are, I think, in the neighborhood of 40 separate workshops, perhaps even more, that are scheduled over the 4 days of the conference on a whole variety of topics, but generally on the theme of the conference, which, as you know, is Grow Godward. And in addition to that, there are plenaries each morning. The detail, unfortunately, I can't really give you at this point. I just don't have the actual program in front of me at the moment. Angie,
well, I'm happy to.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy to speak to that. I'm actually really excited about the program, and as you mentioned, Paula, Peter Lawrence has been our program chair, and he couldn't make it on this morning, but I've gotten to work closely with him on developing the program for this year.
Well, and also I'd like to jump in real quick and just say, you know, all of your whole team are so accomplished in their own right. I mean, Peter is a remarkable person, and Steve is, and Christina, a remarkable musician in her own right. Steve, a retired university professor. I mean, this, you know, the caliber of program that you guys have created is just really wonderful, and the time and detail that, you know, the attention to detail that you've put in is extraordinary. So maybe before you go on the program, tell us a little bit about Peter Lawrence, the program chair.
Sure. Yeah, no, it's been a real privilege to get to work with Peter. He has a few decades under his belt of experience in both higher education and working in religious and interfaith organizations. And by working in, I mean usually founding them or directing mm-hmm. them or doing something at the helm. And
right.
so he just has a really extraordinary breadth of experience in what it is to program, whether that's an event like this one that only takes place over a few days, or even developing curricula for, you know, programs that take place over longer periods of time in whether university settings or more overtly religious settings. And he has a really just long list of accomplishments with regard to interfaith dialogue and really trying to apply the teachings of the Urantia Book as you know, I think he understands them, to figuring out how we can better work together and grow on this planet towards understanding. So I've gotten to see him in action a little bit. I got to technically co-facilitate, but it was really him facilitating and me learning one of the big questions workshops that he runs, which is, you know, an opportunity for people to just gather and discuss the way that they understand some of those big life questions that we're so lucky to have addressed in the Urantia Book, but that, you know, each person has probably given some thought to, and to kind of come together in a space that is completely about engagement and learning, as opposed to any sort of, I guess, what you might call preaching.
Right.
So he's really skillful at that. And so all of that to say, one of the earliest things that we did, you know, I mentioned that it's sort of a 2.5 year long process of putting together a conference like this. And having grown up going to international conferences and also gotten feedback from people who had been to some of the ones recently, you know, there's always just a breadth of perspectives on what a conference program should offer. You know, there are some folks who want to come to an international conference and really be able to go in depth in terms of their study mm-hmm. of the Urantia Book, and to feel like they're getting to sit in with some of the people who have dedicated, you know, decades of thought and scholarly research and insight into this text, and to really learn from them, you know, and to have it be an in-depth educational study experience. And then there are others who say, well, I have study in my study group at home. You know, when I want to come to a conference, I want to have programs that have to do with how I live these teachings, you know, how I go out and serve, and what are the hands-on experiences that people have had, and how do they apply to me, you know, and how might I learn from my brothers and sisters in this community about that. You know, and then you have people who say, I'm coming with my two kids and, you know, also my spouse who doesn't actually read the Urantia Book but is open to learning about it because it's so much part of my life, and, you know, what are they going to be doing during the day? And, you know, so there's a wide variety of hopes that people bring to an event like this. And, of course, you know, we can only stretch the program so far in trying to accommodate that, but I really did want, and Peter did as well, to try to honor the diversity of our community in this undertaking. And so the result of that is that we divided the program into 7 different tracks. And these are really just signposts. It's just a guide. If someone knows that they really want to focus their whole experience on in-depth book study, you know, we have a track that's for study the book, you know, and that just means that it's sort of a coding. So when you read the titles of the different workshops, they'll have a label, whether that's a color or just the description of the track, so that you know that this particular workshop would be more geared toward in-depth study. We have a track that's Serve with Love, which is all about outreach and service and workshops and activities that fit in that vein. We have a track on Living the Teachings, which is kind of what I was referencing, you know, the insights and experiences people have gained in their efforts to make the teachings manifest. And we have a track mm-hmm. called Grow Personally, which is, you know, these are all under the umbrella of growing Godward. And so, you know, the book teaches that true religion yields personal spiritual growth. And so this track really focuses in on the inner experiences that we have on our religious paths and what we can learn from each other about that. We have a track called Engage the World, which is with regard to how our community members are engaging in their communities globally. And so that includes both international participants and conversations and learning about the way that this revelation is spreading worldwide, and also engaging with our brothers and sisters across religious disciplines and really bringing the teachings of the Urantia book into conversation with other individuals and groups of religionists. And then we have two tracks that are in some way related to our family life and our programs for young adults. We have a Bring the Family track, which is focused on the book's teachings about family life. And there will be a few workshops in that track, as well as throughout the conference, opportunities for folks to volunteer with the children's program. And Janet will be on later to talk more about that. And then we have a track, the last one, called Seek Truth. And this is specifically an outgrowth of the Truth Seekers program that was developed for young adults that came out of some of our earlier international conferences. And the program that they've developed for the adult participants in the conference is actually directly interactive based on what they describe as the divine pattern in the Urantia book. So it explores the relationship between meanings and values and, you know, the way that living those open the windows in our soul that allow us to consciously grow closer to God in our inner lives. So they'll be doing a whole sort of three-day program along those lines. So that's the broad strokes of what the program entails. But honestly, the thing I'm really excited about is the individual workshops and what's been proposed and what's going to be offered. And I know that both of you, Andre and Paula, are both giving workshops. So if you are interested in just sharing what those are going to be as a little example of the kinds of offerings, I would love that.
Sure. One of the workshops that I'm going to be taking part in is Urantia University is going to be rolling out some of its overview course to the readership, and just as a way of showing what we hope is going to be a beginning at various courses that Urantia University is going to be putting out there to people, and we'll be doing it under our arm of Urantia Institute. At this point, we're not pretending to be, you know, a full blown university. That's something that we aspire toward, but really what we're interested in doing is making the book and its teachings more accessible both to the advanced reader and to the new reader. And so that's what we hope to do, is to roll out our overview course. Paula has been part of that with her take on part four, and essentially that overview course is going to be an overview of the book, study methods, parts one through four, and presenting the Urantia book and giving introductions to the Urantia book, along with a along with a capstone project for people that are actually taking the course. But what we'll do is be giving a taste of that at IC14.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I'm probably going to be involved in that somewhat. We've been recording some of those introductory classes, and David Kander has provided his expertise with the video. And that's something else that we should mention. David has been working on a project for 5 years now that he has called the Joshua Ben Joseph Project, and he has created a film, a 90-minute film, reimagining Jesus. And I've seen this film 3 times now, and that was before he had all of the voiceovers and the original music score. So there's Steven Zent is one of the voiceovers, and Jennifer Siegel is the other, and then Gary Deinstadt in New York has done the original score. And I haven't seen it yet with the music or with both of the voiceovers in it. But it's absolutely brilliant, and it's going to be debuted at this conference. So that'll be, I think, a special event. And my workshop, I started doing public outreach with the Urantia Book in 1983, and then I started coordinating that public outreach for my own local group in about 84. And then in 88, I started doing expos for Mo Siegel and Jesusonian Foundation, and I figure at this point in time I have 4,000 hours standing at a booth telling people about the Urantia Book, and I've actually introduced the Urantia Book on almost every continent and gone and told people about it. And what my workshop will be then is about outreach and about some of the great things that I've encountered and the great people I've encountered and the things I've learned in these many, many hours of outreach to the public, and wonderful lessons and stories. So that'll be fun for me. I actually, somebody asked me to do that workshop. It wasn't something I conceived of myself, but they said, Paula, I think this would be really great if you'd do this. So I just went ahead and submitted it. And, of course, Peter got back to me and said, yeah, Paula, we've scheduled you. So I think at this point, Angie, am I correct to say that you could probably still apply for to be part of the program or the workshops, but they're all full now?
They are, yeah. Actually, the program is complete, and in the month of April, we'll be getting it up onto the IC14 website in its entirety, so people can peruse the offerings in advance and check out what they might want to attend. And just so everybody knows, that website is just www.ic14.org. It's very simple. So all the information that we're talking about can be located there.
Yeah, you could probably just put Grow Godward into the search engine and go right there, too. So either way, you've got it. And you know, I know that you have some great plenary speakers scheduled. Do you know anything about what they plan to speak about, or can you speak to that a little bit, either Steve or Angie?
I can certainly speak to the plenaries, and Paula and Christina, I would love for you to join in as well. Paula is actually chairing the worship program for IC14. That's yet another hat you're wearing, Paula. I want to hear from you about that. But I'll just give a little overview of the plenaries, and then we can maybe talk a little more about some of the details. But, you know, since we have this general idea of growing Godward being the arc and the theme of the conference, we have the 4 plenaries, and they're going to be a sort of progression of different kinds of soul growth. And so we have grow in joy, grow in gratitude, grow in spirit, and grow in love. And we have a guiding quote from the Urantia Book for each of those days, which, of course, is just this really delicious thing to get to do, to to really delve into the spiritual content of this text we have, and then try to bring that to life through these plenary experiences. And as Christina mentioned, there, or maybe it was you, Paula, but the plenaries will include one keynote speech each day, and then that will be followed by about an equal amount of time that's dedicated to discussion. So each keynote speech will contain one central question or idea, and then our entire conference body will all get to discuss that idea in small groups as part of the plenary to really try to, you know, grapple with some of the questions that are of greatest concern to us as Urantia Book students and as a community. And so we have four phenomenal speakers, and we have this Jonathan Zoba on the first day, and Merrick Horn. Yeah. Yeah, John Zoba, followed by Merritt Horn, followed by Diane Lebrecht, and then we have Janelle Mazza on the closing day. And
so John Zoba will be Growing Joy, Merritt Horn, Growing Gratitude, Diane Lebrecht, Growing Spirit, and Janelle Mazza, Growing Love. Essentially,
well, that
basic
runs the
things.
Gamut. Yeah, that's wonderful. You've got two of our newer generation on the front and back end, and two veteran readers in the middle there.
That's right. Yeah, and they have indeed come up with some really phenomenal ideas about the specific content of their speeches, and I feel I want to leave them the flexibility to keep adapting those, so I don't want to prescribe anything on this show about what they're going to talk about. But suffice to say that we've had really dynamic conversations, and I think they're going to ask some important and provocative questions and really, you know, help us to think deeply about some of these important ideas and ideals that we get from the book. And yeah, and those themes that I mentioned, while I think they do apply to the keynote speeches, they are also more broadly thematic for the purposes of developing the artistic and worshipful experience that each of these plenaries will provide. And on that note, I don't know, Paula, do you want to speak to that at all? And Christina?
Well, Christina, go ahead and talk about some of your concepts of not just being wholly left and right, you know, left at one moment, right at another, but kind of integrating that throughout the day of the or throughout the morning of the plenary.
Well, I personally am a very right brain person. I'm sure that's no surprise to anybody who knows me. But and we talked about, you know, initially the idea of having a reading and then some art form and then another spoken word and then an art form, and decided that it would be better that we stay on the right brain for the first 45 minutes and then stay on the left brain so that we really could get to that deep level of worship. And I'm really thrilled that we have chosen to do the 45 minutes of worship. And we also have Angie and I have spent 2 weeks together in January, and the thing I'm really excited about is we're having a thought adjuster ceremony on the final plenary for the young children, and Angie remembers that fondly as one of her conference experiences. And so Angie and I have invented the tadpole dance and drumline with a quote from the Urantia book, "The quickest way for a tadpole to become a frog is to live loyally each moment as a tadpole." And we will be leaping. I think it's 2 inches would have changed the whole course of evolution. So that's going to be a really fun thing. I think that the fact that we are combining poetry, moments of silence, music, readings from the Urantia book, and upbeat music is again, going to make the first 45 minutes really worshipful. And then we will go into the amazing plenary speeches by Jonathan Merritt, Diane, and Janelle. So we are looking for things like movement and poetry and music in a very balanced way.
Well, and I just, I'll add
sounds
about
great.
Worship. The philosophy, at least that I have, is based on a very simple formula that the Urantia book gives about worship. It says worship leads from prayer to thanksgiving to worship. And for me, it's a process of touching the great heart, the divine heart. And we go to that, you know, the hope is that we can go together to that very deep place where we touch the divine heart and we let the Creator know how much we love him. And then we, sorry about the dogs, then in turn allow ourselves to feel his presence and his love and receive his love back. And so the process is getting people into that space of the heart and where you know, the heart opens up and the love of God flows in and out. And it's a sacred space. And music is so instrumental in that for me, at least, and so is beauty. Both music and beauty get me there into that space very quickly. And also inspirational words, obviously, poetry and words from the Urantia book, obviously, can bring us into a very worshipful place because they cause us to go deep within. And so we want to incorporate all of that, and we have these extraordinary musicians like Marianne and her harp and Christina and her violin. You know, like Christina said, a string quartet and the piano, incredible musicians. I mean, it's just going to be, the idea is to utilize the space 100% to create truth, beauty, and goodness in a worshipful environment that lets us go really deep in our love to the Creator and our expression of love. And maybe we can mention a little bit about the space and some of the plans that we have for this space. Do you want to do that, Angie?
Sure. Well, this
or
to...
Christina too.
Yeah. Well, we can talk about it together. I'll just give the brief overview that it was one of the appealing aspects of this venue. Just that a lot of things. Even though it's quite a large campus, they have a pretty big student body. The area that we'll be using for the conference is a limited one, and the plenary space and the hotel and our space for our evening social activities are all in the same building. So it's easy, very easy to get from one to the other. That's also where our conference store will be, with books and art and the like. And then right outside of there, within a five-minute walk, is the dining hall where we'll all be eating our meals. And we also have the dormitory residences and the suite-style housing within, similarly, about a 5 to 7 minute walk from that plenary space. So all of that is easily accessible. And then one of the additions that we're excited about is that our children's program is going to be taking place in a tent outside, and I think we'll hear a little bit more about that in a minute, but that's kind of a central gathering place for the conference, is this tent that we're going to decorate and make very sort of special for our group, and a gathering place that distinguishes us and the conference. So that's the layout of where we'll be, and then the plenary space itself is, you know, is where we'll apply a bunch of creative energy to turning it into a space for worship and for performance and for keynote speeches and things like that.
Wonderful. Well, there are other wonderful activities going on ahead of the conference as well. I've just noticed, again, Garth Jameson is putting on his pre-conference retreat, Grow Godward, A Circle of Trust. People meeting July 21st and having a full day on Tuesday prior, and then usually it ends on Wednesday just prior to the conference beginning. Do you want to speak to that at all, anyone?
Oh, this is Christina, and I have attended the pre-conference retreat on meditation and worship, and it is such a great way to start your week. And it's co-hosted with Bobby Dreyer and Garth Jameson. So I always think that when you have a man and a woman team, that you have the ideal team to make an event work really well. And they talk about contemplative worship and different techniques to help you in meditation. And then you sit down in meditation three times a day for a half hour, basically breakfast, lunch, before breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And I find myself wrestling with that monkey mind that chatters for about 28 out of the 30 minutes, and then finally the last 2 minutes I get into that deep state, and then they actually ring the bell when it's time to come out, just at the point when I finally have gotten into that deep worshipful state. And but I think that when you meditate with a group of people, it helps you get into a deeper meditation. So I think they do a wonderful job, and would highly recommend that before you come to the conference. You know, unplug your cell phones. Know that you're in the time and space of truly growing spiritually and developing your relationship with God. So it's a wonderful workshop.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I'll put my plug in as well. I attended 3 years ago, and it was just wonderful. You know, spending time and in meditation. With Bobby and with Guard, and actually had the opportunity, I think one of the first times that he presented this workshop, which introduced me to the practice of centering prayer back in Saint-Hyacinthe near Montreal in 93. And I'm forever thankful to Guard for having had that workshop. It literally changed my life. It changed the orientation of many of the things that I do, and I can't recommend it highly enough to anybody who does want to change, make a change in their life and in their worship practice. It makes a big difference. You know, it's one of the things that many people could say that had been lacking, maybe still is lacking. In the Urantia movement, we do a lot of good study, but we don't help each other necessarily as much as we could in our spiritual practices. And while Guard has been doing this now for decades, literally, and who knows how many people he's helped? He certainly did help me in making that kind of a positive change. Just ratcheting me up to the next level, I think, was wonderful. It changes the whole tenor of the rest of the conference when you start the conference that way. I mean, it's just night and day in terms of, you know, how if you start the conference centered that way, I think different kinds of experiences happen, or you're open to different kinds of experiences.
And Guard is a minister and teacher of professor of comparative religions. He's such an amazing, well-rounded person, and he's done this so many times. He and Bobby have done this together so many times. They're just so good at it. They know exactly what to do. So that's the pre-conference retreat, and sadly, I think that's sold out, isn't it, Angie? I don't think there's any more room for the pre-conference retreat. It gains momentum as it goes, but
hopefully you signed up for that if you felt so inclined and got in on that, because that'll be a wonderful experience for anybody who does it. And the conference, you know, it really is a whole experience. It's very holistic. And so many great things have happened at Urantia conferences. This is something that people don't think about again, but it great ideas have happened there, like the retreat network happened spontaneously at a Urantia conference, IC99. Wonderful projects, a terrific outreach ideas, gatherings of minds, marriages, lots of marriages have happened as a result of Urantia conferences. People who thought they would never find their soulmate went to a Urantia conference and found, you know, the love of their life and are happily married as a result of this gathering, this coming together. So there is ample time for people to just sit and talk, get to know each other. Club UB is so much fun. We just go and we have, you know, there's typically wine and beer, and there's an open mic and a band playing, and there usually it's a mix of both open mic and planned performances. I still remember Brendy's spontaneous poetry recitals at Club UB, things we've done, you know, costume parties we've had at the gala the last evening.
Yes.
It's just...
That was memorable, you know, 3 years ago. All the costumes that were there was really a hoot. You know, Urantia-themed costumes. People went on in all kinds of different directions with that. I don't think I saw a Fandor, but who knows? Maybe...
That's what you have to remember how much fun it is. I've got to share a little anecdote, and we have another caller, so I'm going to put our other caller on. But in 1990, I went to Snowmass with Andre's sister, Maria, and she and I were driving up the hill. It's Maria, right, Andre?
Yeah, he knows what I'm going to say.
She and I were driving up the hill to Snowmass Village together. The Urantia conference was going on, and Maria said, "Yes, I got here yesterday actually with my brother." And she said, "We pulled into the parking lot, and his head popped and light came out." I always remember that. What she said, it was so cute. His head popped and light came out. That's how it feels though. When you know that you're going to be with your peeps, your friends, your family, we all are celebrating the glory of revealed truth. And it really is a slice of heaven, a slice of light and life. That's, you know, I've had people say, "I think I fell in love with about 100 people this weekend." Or, it took me weeks to get the smile off my face. I've heard these kinds of comments after conferences on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So they really are wonderful. And if you've never gone, you should really make an effort to go. I think that you would be glad you did. So just a little station identification. You're on Blog Talk Radio, The Cosmic Citizen. We're talking about IC14 with the conference planners. Right now we have with us Christina Seaborn, the music chair, and Angela Thurston, conference chair, the overall chair. And right now we have somebody in area code 541. You're with us on The Cosmic Citizen.
Thank you, Paula. This is Janet.
Hi, Janet. Janet is our family life chair. So.
And hi, Andre.
Yeah. Great to be on the show. So what are you planning for families, Janet?
Well, we are going to resurrect... for a third or fourth time, the family, the Jerusalem Marketplace, is the tent environment that Angie talked about being right outside of the hotel where most of the activities plenary and workshops, and some of the lodging is taking place. So it's just a few steps outside. We're going to raise a tent, a 40 by 60 tent, and use hay bales to provide seating and provide workstations for the children. And the goal here is they can, this tent environment recreates what a village might have looked like in the center square in the times of Jesus. So children will come, and adults as well. So this is really for the whole family, the whole Urantia family, will come and choose costumes from Iraq and with headbands and scarves and skirts and vests. And they will dress as characters from the times of Jesus. And then they will engage in activities in the marketplace that might have occurred during 2,000 years ago. And so there'll be mill grinding, and there'll be beadwork and clay work. And the children can purchase their supplies and sell their wares with little gold painted rocks that they'll carry on a canvas or burlap pouch on their waist. There'll be a jail for any citizens of the marketplace who might feel tempted to take something that actually doesn't belong to them, or to cause any kind of civil disobedience in the tent. They will be escorted by the guards to the jail.
Roman centurions or Sanhedrin guards?
Probably the centurions.
Okay.
And I don't know, Sarah, if you're listening to this. Sarah Blackstock is the brainchild behind the marketplace. The first time that we set it up in a big way that I remember was during the conference in Flagstaff at IC96.
I remember that well. It was wonderful.
And that, again, was a big tent kind of in a lawn area right outside where most of the activities occurred. So it was continued for conferences, international conferences, every 3 years for a few years. But, you know, our community's been going through a family planning restoration, I guess I would call it, in which in 96 we had lots of children, lots of young families. And then as those families grew, then the children kind of aged out of the children's program. And now a lot of them are coming back in the youth and young adult program, in the True Seekers program. And even older, some of those children are coming back with their own children. So, you know, it's a natural rhythm in our community. And so once again, we're going to be staging the Jerusalem Marketplace in a big way. And, you know, we may not have the numbers of children that we had 20 years ago, but we have lots and lots of young adults who will be starting families here in the next 5 to 10 years. And this is a great model for them. Something fun to do in which their children can get to know Jesus in a playful way.
I just got a call from an attendee yesterday, Katie Roach. Katie has been to so many Urantia conferences. She's just a faithful attendee, and she's brought her children. And her son and daughter, Rhiannon and Griffin, are both coming. And she made the comment to me, well, Sarah Blackstock is one of Griffin's heroes. And she said this, which was really touching to me. She said, Griffin hasn't read the whole Urantia book, but he loves this community. And he loves the teachings of the book. And he just wouldn't miss it. And he's 21 years old, and she made a comment about the Jerusalem marketplace and what a role that played in his life, and how much he appreciates it, and how, you know, it bonded him to all of us. So it's a great thing. I'm glad, Janet, that you've taken it on. I know how much work it is. It's a lot of prep.
Well.
But it's clear that the kids have a great deal of fun with it. You know, you always they get right into the costumes and they play the parts. I mean, they're just having a great time doing it.
And I would say they can't play their parts without adults involving themselves as mm-hmm. well. And so our, mm-hmm. one of our hopes is that the youth and young adult community really engages in the Jerusalem Marketplace as well as, you know, the older readers, because this really is a community which encompasses all ages, and the marketplace is a place where all ages can play together. And so we're hoping really to emphasize people, you know, kind of stepping into their childlike personas and coming into the tent and dressing up and playing with a community that is really getting in touch with the way Jesus lived.
Sounds great.
And are you planning to do any workshops on family life as well and parenting?
Yes, we are. There are three members of our community, of our planning team, Miranda, Clendenning. Yes, thank you. My emphasis is on the wrong syllable there. Miranda has been doing a lot of work on the values curriculum for children and families, and she has a community that she's worked with pretty closely. Bill and Kate Cooper are involved with this project as well. She will be doing an introduction to that program the first morning, and then the next three afternoons will be working with children and parents to present part of that curriculum. It's an hour and a half each afternoon, so it's not a long time, but she can at least introduce it to the community. And so one of our workshops in the Bring the Family track is her introduction to the values program. The second workshop that Bring the Family Track will provide is a roundtable that Sarah Blackstock is going to facilitate on the spiritual practices in families that our community has experience with and success with. So hopefully she'll get parents, young parents, not yet parents, old parents, together to just really really have a conversation about what works in your rancher families in terms of presenting cosmic truth, cosmic reality to their offspring. And, you know, all of us have had challenges with that because most of us don't go to more traditional churches. Our community mm-hmm. and our religious life is really experienced within the rancher family. And so we want to share the techniques, the ideas, trial and error, spiritual practices for families that we know about or don't know about and want to share. So that's the second workshop in the Bring the Family track. And the third one is one that I'll be presenting on family meetings. And this comes out of the work Bob Slagle did many years ago. In fact, he wrote the family meeting handbook. It must be 25 years ago.
More than that, I think. Yeah.
Is it more than that? Mm-hmm. A lot of young families in the early years used this book as a handbook, you know, as it's written, to conduct family meetings with their own families. And Keith and I did that for the 25 years that we raised our children. I have little notebooks going back with scribbles because after the meeting, each family member has to sign the book, and so you know, I have pre-writing signatures from my children for our family meetings. And the practice is one I think is probably the best practice for families that I could recommend. I have been working with families most of my career and still do, actually, and I present family meetings as a solution often to communication challenges in families in the work I still do. So I'll put together a little how-to on family meetings, and we might even practice a little bit. I really feel like when people say, you know, what's a great parenting technique, that family meetings is the best.
Isn't that great?
That's
and Bob
tremendous.
Did write a wonderful book about that, Family Meeting Handbook, which is available online at the store at urantiabook.org if you're interested. And it is, it's such a wonderful practice. I'm glad you guys are going to do that. I'd love to be in that workshop myself, Janet. I know you'll do a great job with that.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, when I think of it, there is going to be another, I think, there's the potential of there being a part of a presentation for Arlene Weimer along those same lines, and that is her topical on part four, which is Jesus as a Father. And, of course, she and Buck Weimer did use also that family meeting format in raising their children. And I can't say enough that for any family that's functioning, you know, with that level of harmony, bringing that in as a practice. I can't imagine, I mean, what would you say is the main result for your children as a result of that? I know we're talking about the conference here, but for people that may be drawn to anything you're presenting or showing or talking about regarding family meetings, what would you say was the main result for your children growing up that way?
Well, I think, first of all, it gives each member of the family a voice, and therefore each member feels respected, no matter how young they are. Mm-hmm. It allows an arena in which children and parents can bring their concerns, their frustrations to a pre-planned meeting. So you have it every week, so you know that there is a time when you can say, look, I'm really tired of Susie taking my dolls. She comes into my room, she takes what she wants. Now, instead of the children having that argument in the moment and wrestling over the doll, the parent can say, we have a family meeting agenda, you know, a list of ideas for our agenda. Why don't you write that down? So then she can go and she can write down, you know, I don't want her in my room.
And
when
it creates
comes,
a safe space for her to say that.
Very safe.
Right.
It teaches children that they don't have to resolve their problems in a power struggle in the moment.
Right.
That they have a voice, they have the respect of the family they live with, and that these issues will be resolved at the family meeting.
I have to point out that... Go ahead, Janet, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead,
well,
Paula.
It just seems like there's an underlying theme here, too, and I always, it tickles me, the theme that we come up with, but also the theme that the angels seem to bring through. And, you know, Andre pointing out that Arlene is going to be doing this presentation on the parenting techniques of Jesus. Jesus is a parent. And Angie's play about the story of Ruth and Jesus' relationship with Ruth, as we know, Ruth it was essentially Jesus' child. Jesus was the only father Ruth ever knew. And now you're talking about this parenting track. It's interesting, the theme of, you know, the family meeting. And Jesus was really a master of the family meeting and one of his main parenting techniques. So it's just kind of another theme that's coming through that I tend to look at as something the angels are guiding. When more than one of us start to bring it through almost serendipitously, it's an angel gift, I think.
Looks
we're
definitely.
Raising cosmic citizens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
So we've had a question on the board as well, and this is more of a general question, and it has to do, excuse me if you've already mentioned this, Paula, but did we talk about streaming yet of the conference?
We didn't.
No. So a couple of people on the board have asked the question, Are there going to be any segments of the conference that are streamed the way certain conferences have had certain sessions streamed for people that, for one reason or another, just are not going to be able to make the conference but would love to at least vicariously participate in
one or two parts of it. Could anybody speak to that?
Sure, I can. This is Angie.
Hi, Angie.
Hi. we will be streaming the keynote speeches from the plenaries. So that'll be four speeches of about 20 minutes each. And then we're assessing the other content of the workshops, those 40 workshops that we talked about, and we'll also be having a few presentations throughout the week that are outside of the workshop tracks. We'll be assessing which, if any, of those it would make sense to try to stream, at least to stream live. We have a pretty amazing group of videographers and technically talented and experienced folks who will be helping with conference documentation in general, and they are going to be documenting the conference pretty broadly and working to put together some really nice takeaways afterward as far as media content that we can then put online for people to access into the future. And some of those will take the form of edited compilations, I think, but depending on what kind of footage we get, it could be that we end up posting some specific workshops in their entirety, things like that.
Okay.
So that we're still in conversation about what's going to be the most effective use of media in that regard, but at the very least, we'll be streaming the plenary speeches.
Oh, wonderful. Okay. I know that I've when I was living in Quebec, and knew that I wasn't going to be able to get to, I think it was a summer study session at the time, it was just wonderful to be able to tune in and, you know, actually be in the conference room. And in the case of it being Technique Towers, having been there before, really almost feeling vicariously like one was there, to the point of even seeing a storm brewing outside that I heard was a momentous storm in that, without digressing, it was just wonderful to hear people giving their plenary talks and seeing the participants as well that were there, and it's just a way of for people that aren't going to be able to make it really feeling a part of it and sort of re-feeling their fellowship with the Urantia community.
Yeah, and it's much appreciated. I know that not everybody can afford to be there, and that's just the reality of it. And so I really do appreciate also the fact that they might be able to enjoy certain moments. I know it's very logistically hard to stream everything. I don't think we could even do it, but some choice things I think are wonderful, and it gives people a chance to connect and feel connected, you know, spiritually and in every way to what's going on there. I love that we make that possible. And many of the sessions may not be streamed, but a lot of them will be recorded. Is that right, Angie?
Yeah, that's right. And that's exactly the content that we'll then put together in a way that hopefully can be shared with the broader national and international community. It may not be that week of July 23rd through 27th, but it'll be content that we're then able to put up online shortly thereafter.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And is it David Cantor that's spearheading the video aspects of the conference?
David is our technical director for the
conference. Right.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we have David, and he's working with Craig Rorson, who has a lot of experience in that area as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's some other folks, you know, Richard Jernigan and Teva Orjula, and, you know, people who have spent a pretty significant part of their career in this field, just as Christina was referring to with our musicians. You know, we're just really blessed to have extraordinary talent in our community. So they're putting their heads together about that as we speak.
Yeah, wonderful. I have a question. Just, you know, there certainly are readers in the local area, you know, not too far away within a state, and of course that particular area. You're close to New Hampshire, Vermont. You're very close even you're only, you know, 250 miles away from the Canadian border. Is there any possibility of people attending just part of the conference and, you know, even if they could only come down for a day or two? Is that possible?
Oh, sure, absolutely. And that's the nice thing about the commuter option, you know, is that someone can come in just for a day, but they're also welcome to come in and stay overnight and be there for half the conference or any portion of it. You know, that's certainly something that we're able to accommodate.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And that's a nominal. You mentioned that earlier, a nominal commuter fee, right? $40 a day. But that
right.
doesn't include meals. That's just a program fee.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and people are also welcome to purchase meals throughout the conference as well, even if they register for the whole time. You know, you can always decide to buy a meal on the spot. They'll be happy to sell it to you. So,
okay.
Yeah, there's flexibility there. Speaking of the local area, one thing I would love to speak to that we haven't yet, if it's all right, is just this aspect that's near to my heart, which is some of the programming that we're going to be offering for our younger folks. Janet spoke to the children's program, which will be what we have on offer during the day for the kids who come, and that's generally, you know, kids 12 and under or under 12 even. And then we have a program, the Truth Seekers program, which some are familiar with. It's a pretty phenomenal opportunity for teenagers, and that's something that offers a curriculum in the morning, and all those folks will be staying on campus with the rest of the conference goers. Curriculum in the morning on some of the meanings and values that emerge from the teachings of the Urantia book. And then during the day, they go on these awesome adventures, and they've found really, really cool stuff to do in the Massachusetts area. There's, I think, okay, the list is like waterboarding, kayaking, canoeing, sliding down waterfalls, rock climbing, hiking, zip lining, caving. I mean, it's epic. And so that'll be for the whole teenage demographic. Also, they're taking any sort of 12, 13-year-olds who would be interested in going out on those adventures are welcome to go as well. So they'll be heading out on buses during the day and then coming back in the evening. And we're actually presenting our first ever Urantia Book Youth Group in the evening. And that's something that the Fellowship's Youth and Young Adult Committee is spearheading. And Paula, your daughter May, has been instrumental in some of the creative energy for that. And so we're really excited about having sort of an opportunity as the older or more experienced young adults in this community to really take some of the younger or newer young adults in our community under our wing and just have conversations and spend time and hang out together and explore the ways that we're striving to live these teachings and the ways that that's informing our lives while also just enjoying each other's company, since it is so rare for all of us, you know, of all ages, but for the young adults included, it's so rare to be in an environment where you're surrounded by, you know, tens of young people who actually know this book and are excited by it and are trying to figure out how to live their lives in alignment with what it teaches. And, you know, that's a really precious opportunity. So we're excited to offer something that will hopefully allow us to really build on that. And we're looking ahead to IC17 already and thinking about the ways that we can shape our young adult programming moving forward. And so we'll be doing some active brainstorming about that at the conference itself. And part of that actually includes a panel, which we're pretty excited about. We're going to have 8 young adults speaking on a panel about their the work that they're doing and the ideas that they have for creative dissemination of the teachings. And all of those folks are coming to the conference on scholarships that they applied to. It was a competitive application process to receive a scholarship to come participate in the conference and also speak on this panel in in specifically terms about the ways that they're trying to get the teachings out there in methods that apply especially to this rising generation and thinking about what it looks like to be an evangel of the gospel that Jesus presented and that we now have revealed in the fifth epical revelation. So that should be a pretty cool part of the program.
Well, and you're really facilitating that well. I mean, to have scholarships, to have all these activities, and people ought to know. I mean, if they don't know you, they really ought to know that you are not just speaking off the cuff or speaking from theory. You know whereof you speak. You grew up in your rancher community and went to many of these conferences growing up. And this is coming right out of your experience. And I'd have to say the proof is in the pudding, Angie. there's been a wonderful development that happened as a result of, I'm sure you would agree, growing up in your rancher community.
Yeah.
Well, there's no question about that from my perspective, in that I was pretty much as lucky as you could be.
Yeah.
Well, and it's,
so it's a wonderful
it's
opportunity great. You're providing.
You know, the True Seekers program, I think you just described, and it's been a great opportunity for young people to come and be engaged. And, of course, it's headed up by Tom Chocat and Fred Harris, and they're very good mentors to take these young people out and get them, you know, get their minds and bodies actively engaged and help them bond with each other. And this was another thing that Katie Roach said to me yesterday while she was registering. She said, you know, these friendships that are made for these young people are lifelong. And that's true, I think, across the board with the friendships you make at conferences, at least in my experience. They're lifelong. And it provides an opportunity to bond and get to know readers. You know, we're not like a regular church in that we can come together every Sunday in a more intimate setting and we can all work together as a community on a regular basis and do service projects and this kind of thing. We're spread out all over the country, even all over the world. So we have to come together as we can, in the ways we can. And at least now, you know, the Internet gives us an opportunity to stay in touch with each other on a regular basis and even collaborate in ways that we couldn't have collaborated before in the past. So these conferences are all important, though, because they give us that face time, that personal time that we don't really get as a community any other way. And that's what I meant earlier when I said they become like a pilgrimage. For us to come together again and see each other and be with each other, it's invaluable. And as Angie pointed out earlier, you know, we try to move it around the country every 3 years. You know, we try to bring it somewhere where we haven't been in a while so that the readers in that area have more of an opportunity to come, even commute, drive there if it's not too far. And, you know, we just like to open it up. And it's interesting that if it's on the East Coast, it's hard for the West Coast to get all the way there. And if it's on the West Coast, it's hard for the East Coast to get all the way over to the West Coast. And we appreciate that. And, you know, but we do try to move it around because we feel that this FaceTime, this coming together is so important and so special. And part of the reason why we have it at universities is because they give us an opportunity to have it affordable and to have those meals together and that coming together as a community, it's unlike other, you know, venues like a hotel or something, and much more expensive at a hotel. At a university, we have use of the facilities and the you know, rooms, the meeting rooms, the classrooms, the auditorium is all much more affordable, so that's the point for having it at a university, and it has worked out well for us. We try not to go anywhere where it's too hot, but you know, you have a brief window of time in the summer when families can come. Let's face it; I mean, you know, kids are starting to go back to school now in the middle of August. So they get off at the beginning of June, and then families want to work in vacations and whatever else. So, it's there's a lot of logistical challenges around having a conference, but it's so worth it when, on the other side of it, you've had a wonderful time. You've met new people. You've been inspired. You feel spiritually recharged. I'd like to mention also that you mentioned May, Angie. May is going to be running the conference store this time with our good friend Joanne Weedman, who is mentoring May in running the conference store. And people may not realize that if you're coming to the conference and you have a handiwork that you would like to offer for sale, I'll just give an example. Trudy Cooper makes beautiful glass jewelry and stained glass. Trudy has almost been able to pay for her conference every time just by what she sells at the conference store. If you're an author, a musician, you have CDs. If you have artwork, we'll have a gallery there as well. And you can offer work just for display, or you can also offer it for sale. I remember one year Trudy brought a beautiful stained glass piece that was probably 6 feet tall. It stood upright on a stand, very spiritual piece, and, it sold for a lot of money. And it was beautiful. It was an amazing work of art. And you'll see a lot of that there at the conference, the handiwork, the artistic expression and inspiration of the Urantia book and its teachings, which itself is a wonderful thing. So we have a gallery and a store, which is something, and you can actually apply to have your products in the store if you'd like. That's all available at the website Angie mentioned, ic14.org. And, Angie, I think we had Jeff on here for a minute. The area code was 925, and then he dropped off. So I don't know if he's going to come back or not, but I know you have to go in just a few minutes. So I'm going to give you a chance to wrap up what you would like to say.
Thank you. Yeah, and I really appreciate everything that you just shared, and the mention you made of putting our events in different parts of the country just reminded me of how wonderful it's been now that I'm actually in the New England area to get to know a new group of Urantia book readers who are all based in New England and who have been just remarkable in their excitement and their commitment to helping to make this conference a really special one and to taking on that sense of ownership as local hosts, and that's one of the delightful things about Urantia is that, we've got this big, amazing world and we get to share it with each other. And so they've really taken that seriously, and I think they and I are excited to be able to welcome people to this part of the country and to show them, why we are making our homes here. And I'm just really looking forward to being able to have the experience of day-to-day. We put all of this thought into the program and all of the aspects that we've been mentioning, but at the end of the day, as you spoke to, what's really magic about these events is just the relationships. And, we know from our book and from our experience that relationships are ends in themselves. And it's just so remarkable to be in this experience of spiritual coming together. And that's basically my goal for the conference, is to foster the greatest expression of spiritual unity, knowing that that's not something that can ever be assumed, and that is completely reliant on our individual wills coming together and trying to live God's will all in community as a group for this week that we have. So I'm really excited to get to share that with everyone, and I hope that if anybody has specific questions about whether it's getting to the conference or any details of what it's going to entail, that they feel free to, you can submit those questions through the website. There's a contact page and those questions go to me, and I'll be sure to answer them in a timely fashion or direct them appropriately. So you can go to ic14.org and go to the Contact Us page. Paula, I know that you at the fellowship office are also very used to addressing questions, so I imagine they can come to you as well. But I'm really committed to trying to do everything I can to help people get there and to be able to prioritize it, knowing that it's a big commitment, both from a time and resources standpoint. So yeah. Anything I can do, I will certainly put my all into.
Well, thank you for your tremendous effort on this, and all the while going to university, to Harvard Divinity School, which, you know, you're one of the busiest people I know, but you always make time, just like you made time today to come on and talk about the conference, and you're doing a wonderful job, and I just know it's going to be an incredible conference, and I'm very much looking forward to it. So thank you.
Thank you.
From the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, thank you for coming on the show and telling people about it, and looking forward to what will be a wonderful conference.
Well, thank you both, and it's just been, you know, we talk about how we're in training for the Mansion Worlds, and working on such a group project as this is some of the best training I think I could get. So I'm the lucky one in that regard, particularly to be working with you guys. So thanks for having me, and I hope you have a wonderful morning and weekend, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, enjoy the Book of Mormon.
Thanks.
All right.
See you later.
Yeah.
Bye.
Okay. Angie is on her way to a play, so she had to leave a little early so she can make her play. She's going with a group of friends to see the Book of Mormon. So that should be fun. That's one I would like to see. So
And I think,
Christina,
like a good one.
You're still with us, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes. Hi. So, you know, we're going to wrap up a little bit, but Christina and I were just on a conference call yesterday, and we talked about worship at this event. And Christina, I know you've gone to so many conferences in your experience. I think the first time I ever met you was at a Urantia conference in 1990 in Snowmass. And
I actually am a conference-aholic, and I never miss the international conferences every 3 years. And my husband asked me, how can you possibly know where you're going to be 3 years from now? And I just make it happen. I plan it, and I think that's like anything in life. You plan it and do your best. And I have gone to every IC since 1987, and my first one was at Bowdoin College in Brunswick, Maine, and what happened to me there was I did go to the pre-conference retreat for musicians and artists, and it was really an interesting experience for me because I feel confident as a musician, but as a visual artist, I didn't want to wreck what we were doing as a group project. And then I encouraged people to go ahead and sing and play percussion, and they feel just as, you know, kind of worried they're going to wreck the music. And I realized, you know, it was, you know, touche when you turn the tables. And that was where I met Bob Salone, and we did several improvisation concerts. And I felt that at that time that the Urantia movement was a lot more left-brained, and that since that time now we have become really balanced with those who are attracted to the book mostly from their head or their hearts, and it's really nice to see kind of that balancing has happened at this point. And I think it's a really enriching experience, and that's why I like to help organize the conference, because I know it is life-changing for people, and it's changed my whole life. So I really hope that those who come find the spiritual nourishment that they're looking for, and direction and answers. So that's why we do it.
I shared a story with Marianne and Christina yesterday on the phone, and I was trying to explain how I feel, how music takes me into a worshipful space. And I reminded Christina when we were in Australia, in Melbourne, at the Parliament. We did a presentation, a group of us women did a presentation on the tradition. I loved it, the Urantia tradition, and it was celebrating the divine feminine, and we represented the Urantia book to this group of women, extraordinary women at the Parliament. And the room was packed. I think there was probably 100 women in that room. And Christina, we had our portion of the program, probably a two-hour presentation to the women, and different women from around the world were presenting, and there was a group of us Urantia women there. And Christina got up with her violin, and she said to this group, "I'm going to take you away for a while, but don't worry. I'll bring you back. I promise to bring you back." And she started to play, and of course she did take us all away for a while. And she's masterful at this. This is the improv that you're talking about, Christina, which is true. You just channel the heart energy through the music and the spirit, and it's amazing and it's beautiful. And I've, as part of a worship, I've asked Christina to play the meditation, and help me with the pronunciation of this.
Meditation from Thais.
Thais. Oh, it's so beautiful. It is just so incredible. And so the idea then is to have, you know, the beautiful imagery with the music, and to just go away for a while, go into that space where we're bathing in the love of our Creator. And through that unique creative inspiration, the creative imagination, which you bring in so well. And this is about the fourth time that you've been the music director at the IC, or third or fourth time?
And I think that the secret really is having a good team. And I do start 3 years in advance. This, what Angie was saying, is very real, and every event that I'm going to, I network with people and recommend them to participate in some way that seems to be their gift. And it's not something that just happens, but we want it to appear seamless, as if it's just happening during that week. And it happens because of a lot of planning. And so it's an honor and a privilege to be music director.
Yeah, and you do it well. And talk about herding cats, huh? You get a lot of musicians.
Well, the Urantia book encourages us to be creative and to find the leading of the Father's voice within us. And
right.
So that, but it also encourages us that teamwork is the biggest lesson we have to learn here. So,
right.
So we need to learn both. Individual expression, and then working together as a group. And so each one of the artists might get to have one or two or three of their songs performed, and probably not an entire concert of their music. So they come knowing that they're coming to support, and rather than display, you know, their work solely. And as I said, there's only so much time and space, and we do our best to accommodate all the amazing talent that is in the Urantia movement, both right and left-brained.
Right, exactly. And it's a showcase for all of it, and a coming together to grow and learn and love each other and from each other. And so that's what makes it so special. And you mentioned earlier that Michael Duncan is going to do a choir.
The choir director.
Yeah, how is he going to pull that off? Do you know, is he going to get, is he going to send out music to people that are interested? If they're interested in singing in the choir, what should they do?
Well, we would like you to send an email to the IC14 website. We have a contact page and an email address, and let us know that you would like to sing. And the music is available in a Dropbox for the musicians attending the conference. We have actual written music, we have recordings, and then we have the lyrics with chords, which is called a lead sheet. so that people can learn it in advance and then come together as a choir. So if you would like to sing and be part of the IC14 choir, we need your voice.
Yay. So they should just talk. Can they find that information at the IC.org?
IC14.org, go to the contact page, and there's an email address there. It's chair@ic14.org.
Okay, great. So that'll
and you can put your name and email address and the details of your inquiry and submit that. So let us know you'd like to be part of the choir. We need your voice. Please come. We would love to have 15 people or more, so that would be wonderful. Now, actually, you can send it to music@ic14.org, which you can find on the music program page. So that will work as well.
Okay, I'm putting that up on the board.
So the music program page, yeah, I'm just trying to see where it is.
music@ic14.org will work.
Okay.
And will Mike, he teaches choir in school, right? And so he's really quite adept at this. And will he be teaching people their parts or if they need help with that? Like, for instance, I would love to sing in a choir, but I don't read music, so.
Well, you are welcome to join us. I think that the music is easy enough, and we would love your voice.
Okay, great. So
if
Michael would help.
If your heart is leading you that you would like to come, and we will work with you and your if you can read music or not, so come on and join us. Because I think that the music is easy enough. You'll be able to hear it and pick it up.
Great. Well, I was glad to hear Michael Duncan was going to be doing that. Great, contribution.
Michael has he's been the choir director for, I'm not sure if it's a Unity Church, but I think it is a Unity Church in San Diego, and he's adept at working with people, and I also work with a choir at a Unity Church in Minnesota, and I have a mix of singers that can read and can't read.
Oh, good.
So we work together, and it's the same with our music team. I have some musicians that can read and some that play by ear, and I think that we're kind of wired that way. So half of us tend to be more visual, and the other half tend to be more oral in our approach to life, and we work together. So I always think it's good to go with your strength and then work on the other area with people who have that strength.
Yeah, you teach music for a living as well, so.
I do. I have young children from third grade all the way up to 12th graders in orchestra, and we start with Twinkle and we go all the way to playing concertos, so we do it all, including jazz, improvisation, and composition.
That's amazing.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Well, so, and it just shows, the Angie's team of conference chairs is really quite incredible. Everybody very, very well healed in terms of what their, specific job is and very capable of doing a great and fabulous job. So it's going to make it a great conference. And we hope you come. We hope, I want to say, and Christina mentioned it, she's been going since 87 every 3 years. It's a pilgrimage. Don't think that, you can't afford it. There's always a way to go. There may be people going in your area if you need help getting there. You want to ride with somebody maybe, let me know. You can reach me at fellowship@yourranchobook.org. And I'll help you however I can to get there. If you really want to get there, there's got to be a way. And we would love for you to come and join us at this wonderful gathering of hearts and minds, the International Conference 2014 for readers of the Urantia Book.
Yeah.
And
well, thank you, Paula. Thank you, Andre. Thank
well, you,
you
bet.
Christina.
Thank you, Christina. Good talking with you.
Have a fabulous day.
You too.
A great weekend. And thank you to Steve Dreyer, who called in, and, of
yes.
course, to Angie Thurston and Janet Farrington Graham. It was wonderful to hear from all of you guys. There were some conference chairs that didn't get a call in, but I think we covered it pretty well. And
yeah.
Next week, I think we're going to have our Gard Jameson show, Andre. So that
Great.
Was a show that we had planned several weeks ago, and it got canceled. So I hope you guys can tune in and hear Gard. Gard is going to be doing the retreat at IC14, which he has done many times now. And Gard is a trustee of the
Arranger
Foundation.
And talking about many other things. Yeah, exactly. Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, super. Well, this was fun, Paula.
Thank you, Andre. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye for now, everyone.
Bye for now. Until next time. God bless.
God bless.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.